Bonjour Frédéric Huttman au micro, j'ai le plaisir de vous retrouver pour un nouvel entretien. Aujourd'hui, j'ai l'immense plaisir d'interviewer par téléphone en anglais Emily Bynum. Emily Bynum, bonjour.
Bonjour.
You're a flutist of such a great orchestra, the Concerttrebo of Amsterdam. And the reason I wanted to interview you because this orchestra will play the Mahler's Fifth Symphony in Leipzig the 20th of May. It's a Mahler's festival in Leipzig. And
yes.
It's so great to interview you because you belong to a great orchestra, the Concerttrebo of Amsterdam. But this orchestra has a great Mahler's tradition. Do you feel it when you play in this orchestra?
Absolutely, absolutely. Actually, when I joined the orchestra, we were playing from parts which were even used by Mengelberg, and his corrections and additions had been added to the part with blue pencil. And,
yes.
And some of the symphonies had been signed by the players way back in the early 1900s. So, yeah, very, very much so. Part of our tradition.
Mengelberg, who was a conductor of your orchestra during 50 years,
yes,
was a very good friend of Mahler. He invited Mahler to play with your orchestra many times.
Yes, they became very good friends. I think they met beginning of 1902, something like
yes,
that.
Yes, that's right.
And quite soon he invited Mengelberg to come. Mengelberg invited Mahler to come to Amsterdam to work with the orchestra and to present his music. I think the friendship actually sort of grew once Mahler was in Amsterdam. He even stayed at the house of the Mengelberg family, and even though in the beginning I think he was rather upset to be staying in a home, he would rather the anonymity perhaps, or the comfort of staying in a hotel. Anyway, Mengelberg insisted that he stayed in his house, and that was the beginning of a very important friendship, yes.
Emily Bynum, you are the flutist solo of the Concerttrebo of Amsterdam. So Mahler made you many gifts as a flutist, I mean, in his chorus.
Wonderful, wonderful flute part. Very challenging, very... sometimes you have to wait a very long time.
Yes.
You can do something and just can... Then the challenge is really to not get so absorbed in the intensity of the music that you lose your own concentration, professional focus. So that's a challenge in itself. But the solos are quite wonderful. Of course, in the Second Symphony, which, if I'm not mistaken, was the first symphony which... that Mahler presented in Amsterdam. I'm not absolutely sure about that, but there is this wonderful little cadenza with the offstage brass and the flute and piccolo on stage, sort of representing the birds, obviously. My favorite solo is the Third Symphony.
The trombone, the trombone are very... they like it too, the Third Symphony.
For very different reasons.
Yes.
But it's not a very long flute solo at the end of the Third Symphony, but in the last movement of the Third Symphony, but a really beautiful one. There's a very extended flute solo in the last movement of his Tenth Symphony.
Yes, and in the 20th of May you will play the Fifth Symphony.
Yes, indeed.
Under the baton of Myung-Woon Chung.
Yes.
Who is a conductor you know well in this orchestra, no?
Yes, he's worked with us on many occasions. And actually, the Mahler 5 we're doing in May will be revived from a work we did with him in December last year.
And yes.
A sort of revised project.
But when you came in the orchestra 28 years ago, It was not anymore Bernard Haitink, but you knew him well, no? You have played many times.
I had worked with Bernard Haitink in the European Community Youth Orchestra, as it was then.
Yes.
European Union Youth Orchestra, it is now. I hadn't done any Mahler with him. I'd done Bruckner with him. The very first time I worked with Haitink was with Bruckner, and it was an extraordinary experience, saying very little, moving very little, but completely changing the sound of the orchestra. And I've, since joining the orchestra, of course, I've played many Mahler symphonies with Bernard Haitink. Yes.
When you came in the orchestra, who was it? Was Ricardo Chailly the conductor?
That's correct. Yes. I joined in 1995. Ricardo was the chief conductor from 1988.
Yes.
If I'm right in saying, yeah.
He loved Mahler too. It was very different,
yes.
But...
I performed many Mahler symphonies with Chailly. I think actually the fifth I remember doing... he was a great Mahler conductor. The fourth I remember doing with him, and this very controversial, the fourth symphony starts with the flutes and the bells, and controversially there's no ritenuto for us, but there is for the violins as they enter.
Yes.
And how each conductor approaches that is always very interesting.
Just to explain to us, when you came in the orchestra 20 years ago, how did it come? How do you enter in an orchestra like the Concertgebouw of Amsterdam, which is such a great orchestra?
There's quite a rigorous audition process. And so I came to Amsterdam really not expecting even to get passed to the final. But friends of mine had recently had a baby, and I thought, well, that's a nice reason to combine some work and to visit some friends and their new child.
Yes.
I was super prepared, and I didn't want to waste anyone's time. I didn't want to embarrass myself. So I was very well prepared, but I really didn't think I stood a chance. I was 25, and I'm sure that they were looking for someone with more experience than I had. But thankfully, they took a chance.
Yes.
And I'm very happy still to be in the orchestra almost 28 years later.
And speaking about your instrument, the flute, we are speaking about Mahler symphony and all the gifts he gave to your instrument. But we think also about French music, like Debussy, Ravel, who gave you such wonderful pieces. Not speaking only about Daphnis and Chloé or all those pieces, but you have many gifts in French music too.
Oh, it's a real joy to play flute in an orchestra. There is so much fantastic repertoire for us. Even the Beethoven symphonies, the Brahms symphonies.
Yes, the fourth symphony has a great flute solo, the fourth symphony of Brahms.
Absolutely. But the other three symphonies also, they're very, they're beautiful flute writing and very satisfying, rewarding to play.
But it looks very difficult because we are inside the orchestra, and then suddenly you have to make a solo of your instrument. It looks very difficult, I mean, to be in and to be out also.
It is. You have to be a little bit of a chameleon. Sometimes we are mixing with the rest of the woodwind section, and at the time of Mahler was in Amsterdam, I'm pretty sure that the players would have been playing on a wooden instrument. So very often I use a wooden instrument for playing Mahler. And so sometimes you're blending together with the other woodwind. Sometimes there's a line with maybe just the first violins and the flute. Often, of course, with Mahler, maybe contradictory dynamics. So maybe one starts loud, the other starts soft, and one gets softer, the other gets louder, so the color changes. Those sort of things are wonderfully exciting part of playing Mahler flute parts. And then, of course, as you say, some moments where you're left completely alone. It's one of the most rewarding aspects of playing in an orchestra as a flute player, actually, is that we have so many different functions to fulfill.
Yes. And but at the beginning, you were studying in the Wales. I mean, before
I
coming.
I did my bachelor study in London with yes. William Bennett.
Yes.
And he was a student of the great Marcel Moïse.
Yes.
And so he was always talking about the French school. So
yes.
when I did my postgraduate year, I went to study in Paris with the great Alain Marion and had a wonderful, wonderful time studying in Paris. Yeah.
And did you have the occasion to play in French orchestras or never?
No, I didn't. No.
But we are.
No, I was just studying, and I was there for about 9 months, and so I didn't really have time to integrate doing any chamber music or any orchestral. It was really a time of intense study for me. So I had my flute lessons, and I had time to explore a little of Paris. And that was it.
Okay. You're not only playing in the orchestra, you're also a solist. You are playing a lot with your sister, no? Who is a harpist.
Yes, that's right. Yes. She also studied in France.
Yes.
She's a harpist. She studied with, her name is Catherine Bynan, and she studied with Fabrice Pierre in Lyon.
Ah, yes. A well-known harpist, too.
Yes, of course. Yes, yes.
And
now she's playing in the orchestra in Luxembourg.
Yes.
So it's quite difficult these days. She also has two young children.
Yeah.
So it's quite difficult to arrange the two orchestra schedules and the schedule of the family. So we don't play together as much as we would like, but we have over the years played many, many, many times together.
But you have recorded many CDs about a very large repertoire, chamber repertoire.
Yes. And,
I saw it. You are very curious, I mean, about the repertoire.
Yes, everything sometimes more maybe obscure composers. I think it's important that their music is learned, is heard, is appreciated, and that's not always possible in a concert hall. And then the recording is a very good medium for that. So I've made many recordings of popular and less popular repertoire for flute and piano and for chamber music and several concerto recordings. So right now I'm involved in a long-term project called Project Paloma, which is about repertoire written during the Second World War. There's an extraordinary peak in a wonderful flute and piano repertoire written in the period of the Second World War, which
yes.
is extraordinary because it doesn't coincide with the rise of a great player. It doesn't coincide with the development of the instrument. So my suggestion is that perhaps the flute, which is so often the voice of an angel, as Mahler often used it, is the symbol of simplicity, purity, innocence, all these kind of emotions that composers perhaps during the Second World War were reaching for this, maybe subconsciously, but perhaps reaching for this voice of peace musically, which is represented by the flute. Next year I'm recording every album. It's a series of 5 albums.
Yes.
This year I was doing music from the Netherlands, last year Russia, the first one was Germany and Austria, and next year France. So I will record Duthier Sonatine and Jolivet Chandelinos and Cinquante Sonatina. So French repertoire from written during the Second World War period.
And speaking about the Second World War, I mean, there was a Dutch composer who died during the war, Leo Smit. Did you record his music?
I did record his sonata, yes. And also Dick Kattenberg, who was killed during the war. And Marius Flophouse, who was... he survived the war. He wrote two of his most important flute works during the war. Actually, three. He wrote a solo flute piece while he was in the camp. And he wrote a sonata for flute and piano, Sonata da Camera. And he wrote a flute concerto while he was actually in the camp. But he survived, and later he became the director of the Concertgebouw Orchestra.
Ah, yes. Going back to this orchestra, and we were speaking about the great conductors you had the luck to do music with, and we didn't speak about Maris Janssen, who is such a great conductor who died recently.
Yes, indeed.
And who was your conductor during many years.
For many years, 11 years, while he was chief conductor with us, and a wonderful, wonderful... human being, musician and conductor. He really knew how to give and take from orchestral players. So he had famously the two symphony orchestras in Europe, the Bayerische Rundfunk in Munich and the Concertgebouw in Amsterdam.
Yes.
And often, understandably, he would do similar repertoire with both orchestras, but they would sound very,
very
different.
Yes.
Because he didn't impose his interpretation or his concept of a piece. He also listened to what each orchestra presented him and worked from that. So it was always a very, very intense rehearsal period with Maris Janssen. He worked in a very detailed way. I was thinking that Mengelberg probably would have appreciated the detail that Janssen's used to go into in his rehearsals. Often the rehearsal sounded or felt just as intense as a concert did. Fantastic concentration and excitement musically that he created. Every note with its rhythm, its color, its character, and working into the whole shape of the piece he had in mind.
Yes. And what is for you the definition of a great conductor? I mean, how are they different than the good conductors, or what is special that we don't understand when we are in the public?
Yes. Well, it's a very mysterious profession, isn't it?
Yes.
Someone like Haitink, we've mentioned already, I'm sure that the orchestra sound changed the moment that he stood there. There was something about the energy that he exuded that influences the player's, if you can call it spirit or energy, that the sound was changed by him standing there before he even lifted his baton. You know, it was extraordinary sensation. It is quite mysterious how all these different conductors really have their own sound. And, where that comes from, it's quite mysterious. But I always say that, for me, the best conductors are conductors who know what they want to say with the music. They have formed the architecture of the piece so strongly in their mind. They know exactly where each note fits into that cathedral, musical cathedral, if you like. They know where each note should fall, the color it should be, the shape it should be, the texture it should be. But at the same time, he or she knows how to get that from the orchestra. So it's. I think psychology is very important for a conductor to understand how to get the orchestra players to be open enough to the idea of the conductor. You know, when you're sitting on the stage with an orchestra, there may be 80 people who all have their own idea. They all have their own, and maybe they're all right.
Yes.
But the job of the conductor is to get them all looking in the same direction and to be creating the same shape all together. That's the job of the conductor. And so there is a degree of, I don't know, is it psychology involved in presenting your ideas in a way that the orchestra players feel excited to try that if they hadn't thought of that idea themselves. So it's quite a mysterious profession, I would say.
Yes, so it's very funny to listen to you because we have the same feeling, but you are on the stage and we have the same feeling when we are in the concert hall. And speaking about the concert hall, the Concert Rabot is the name of the concert hall, so it has a specific sound. When we are lucky because we can listen to your orchestra every year in Paris now.
Yes, and, isn't that wonderful? In that fabulous new hall, yes.
And how do you feel when you don't play in your Concert Rabot and you play, like, the 20th of May you will play in the Gewandhaus? You have been playing already in the Gewandhaus?
I have played in the Gewandhaus a couple of times, but a very long time ago. But I understand that the Concert Rabot was based on the old... Not the current...
Yes, which was destroyed during the war. I mean the...
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. But the original Gewandhaus, that was a kind of some sort of template for the building of the Concertgebouw in Amsterdam. I was so disappointed when I found out in Dutch that means concert building. There's something that sounded... Before I knew its meaning, it sounded so poetic.
Yes.
And now it's concert building orchestra, which doesn't have quite the same aura to it or ring to it that it does in Dutch.
Like the Gewandhaus, it was a place to a factory at the beginning, the Gewandhaus.
Yes.
So it's the same thing. anyway, for us French, it looks very great, Concert Rabot of Amsterdam. Because
it is an absolutely magnificent hall to play in. But it's a very difficult hall to play in. It's very difficult for where I sit in the orchestra,
yes.
In front of the organ, then it's very difficult to hear... The violins at the front of the stage or the cellos at the front of the stage. And it's also very difficult to hear from side to side. So the back desks of the first violins can't hear the back desk of the cellos or the basses, they hear very, very indistinctly. So it's a very tricky hall to play in.
Yes.
But
the sound is great.
A wonderful... the sound does something magical in the hall and it's a great... concert hall to listen to concerts in, and I think because we are so lucky that we rehearse there every day as well as giving our concerts there, which is not the case for many orchestras, there is an element that we sort of take the acoustic with us, if you like, when we go on tour. So I imagine that when we play in Leipzig we will have in mind how it feels and sounds in Amsterdam and try and take something of that with us, if that doesn't sound too crazy.
And next year we will be lucky to listen to your orchestra, not in Mahler's, but in Bruckner's symphony, the seventh symphony. It's a symphony you have been playing many times, no? The seventh of Bruckner.
Yes, indeed. In the coming 2 years, we have an entire Bruckner festival where we are playing all of the symphonies across 2 seasons, and I think that's going to be the time for me to read a biography of Bruckner, because I think he was quite a complex, fascinating man.
Yes.
And so I think this is going to be the opportunity to learn more about the man behind the notes, as it were, behind the music. And I think that Mahler was perhaps part of Mahler's charm, not only the music, but we know so much about his life that it's, and he's very much a roller coaster personality and life, that there's something of that which is fascinating to musicians and non-musicians alike, I think.
Yes. Emily Baden, it's such a pleasure for us every time we can listen to your orchestra, and we are looking forward with a lot of impatience to your next concert. I remind the concert of the Concertgebouw of Amsterdam under the baton of Myung Woon Chung, the 20th of May in Leipzig during this Mahler's festival. You will play the Fifth Symphony, which is one of the more popular symphonies of Mahler.
Yes, yes.
Because of Visconti and Death in the Night, it looks like a very difficult symphony. No,
it is very tricky symphony.
Yes.
And interestingly, I mean, we think of it as being a sort of second half piece. It's a big long symphony. When Mahler conducted it in Amsterdam, he put that in the first half, and then there was a pause, an interval, and then Rückertlieder followed by Kindertotenlieder.
Yes.
Program. Extraordinary. We would never think of that doing that way round these days. And in anyway, very long program.
It's an idea you can give to conductors, but I'm not sure you will do it.
No. But he also. They had, when they did the third symphony, I believe they had an interval after the first movement.
Ah, yes. Yeah, it's such a long movement, more than 30 minutes.
It's longer than several Beethoven symphonies.
Yes. So, Emily Bainen, you love so much the third symphony that you can't avoid to speak about it even at the end of this conversation.
It's true. And we are playing that at the start of next season, so I'm looking forward to that. Mahler is always a special experience to play, and especially looking forward to playing it in Leipzig for the Mahlerfest.
Yes, and a special experience to hear. Emily Bainen, I thank you very much for this interview. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Delight to speak to you.